A very good morning. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Special thanks to our host, Young Israel of Cherry Hill. Today's daf, Shabbos Tesvav, Shabbos 15a, pagination page 29. We begin from four lines, from the top, in the middle of the line with the word Gufa. Four lines from the top with the word Gufa. We mentioned in our Mishnah that there were 18 things that were debated by Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. They came to resolution after discussion. And our Gemara outlines that the original Shammai and Hillel, the founders of these two great academies, argued in three places. In other words, there may have been additional arguments that were from previous generations. The Gemara mentions that. But they themselves arrived at three arguments. Very, very different than the feeling that we get whenever we discuss their academies that continued after they passed on. The Rambam, in Pirush HaMishnayos, in his introduction, describes that according to a person's absolute clarity of Torah, there would be less arguing, because not only the factual laws, but even their nuances and how to understand them, they're schooled in the same school of thought. And Hillel and Shammai themselves were so great, they only ended up arguing three times of original arguments. Their students, the Rambam describes, based on a quote, Shaloshim Shu Kol Tzarkon, were not quite as great as their Rabbeim. And certainly anything that was textual and factual, they didn't argue about. It was part of the Masorah, the tradition. There's nothing to argue about. But on the nuances, how to handle new cases, different cases, unusual cases, they argued on the nuance of the halacha. And again, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel have many arguments in the course of the Talmud, but when it comes to Hillel and Shammai, we're being described that they only had three arguments, and let's do those three. So the Gemara begins again, four lines from the top, in the middle of the line, Gufa, we learned, Amar Rav Huna said, Begimu Mekomos Nechleku Shammai VeHillel, Shammai and Hillel argued in three things. Shammai Omer, one of the things is the amount of flour you need in order to be obligated in the mitzvah of challah. You have dough, you're going to use it, you're going to make bread out of it. So there's a mitzvah to take off a piece. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they would give it to the Kohen. In our time, for whatever reason, we end up burning it, we don't give it to the Kohen. But there's a mitzvah that it must be taken off. It's a type of teruma. How much flour has to be there to be obligated in challah? So it's learnt out of the amount of mon in the time of the midbar. V'ha'omer asiris o'efahu. How much was a portion for the families living in the desert in the time of Moshe when the mitzvah was originally given? So Shammai Omer, the volume of flour that we're dealing with is mikav chala, v'hillel omer mikavayim. Shammai says that it's one portion kav, and Hillel says it's kavayim, it's two portions of kav. Tosfos explains that it depends whether you count the morning meal and the afternoon meal, or you say that each meal, the morning meal independently and the afternoon meal independently, were obligated in challah, and therefore you have half the portion, according to one, double of that is for the other opinion. V'chachamim omrim, and the chachamim say, the volume of flour is lo k'divrei zeh v'lo k'divrei zeh, not like Beis Hillel, not like Beis Shammai, and they give a different measure, elekav omech tzachayiv b'challah, mishigdilu amidus omru chameshes revoim kemachayavim b'challah, rabbi yosi omru hei p'turim hei v'od chayavim, based on how to extrapolate the numbers from the measures that were in the midbar, we have another opinion of how to paskin. again, to point out that the measure that we're dealing with and the way it's brought in practical how-to write-ups of how to do the mitzvah, we're talking about the volume of flour that was used in order to create this dough. The mitzvah is while it's dough, but we're talking about the volume of flour. Now, interestingly, most people, when they talk about the amount that's obligated in the mitzvah, they talk about weight. They talk about 5 pounds of flour, for example, is certainly obligated in the mitzvah with a bracha. Really, this measure is not a weight measure. It's a volume measure. How much water is displaced by this number of eggs? And that volume, if you filled it with flour, would be the number. But people went ahead for easy user purposes and they weighed that amount of flour so that people typically in the kitchen don't sit there with how many cups. They sit there with weight. They know they buy a 5 pound bag of flour. How much did they use? But really the correct measure would be with cups, because that's a volume measure. I noticed that in one how-to book, they actually went so far as to make this mistake. They actually went ahead and said that if the flour is heavier because it's a moist day or something, and they started doing all kinds of interesting corrections. And it really has to do with volume. It's not based on weight. And if a person would measure based on the number of cups, they would be right on target, regardless of its weight. V'idach, the other case that Hillel and Shammai themselves argued, Hillel Omer, mole hin mayim she'uvim, poslem es hamikvah, an entire hin, that's a measure, of water that was drawn, as opposed to natural flowing water, would pasel the mikvah, meaning, we build our mikvaos with rainwater. We conduit the water into the bore, into the pit that's going to hold the original rainwater. If a person were to fill rainwater up, but he puts it in a bucket and he carries it to the mikvah and dumps it in, so then if it would be a certain amount in the beginning of the creation of the mikvah, it would pasel the mikvah. If you put in a bucket of water later on, after the mikveh is already kosher with 40 saw, no problem, then you would dump that water in. It's not the right thing to do. There's a certain way to add water. But if a person dumped it into a kosher mikveh, it would not passel the mikveh. So he said it as mole hin. An entire hin is the volume of water that would mess up a mikveh in the beginning. That's, by the way, when they change the water in the mikvah, they purposely dry the walls and any crevices with towels, because they don't want residual water to possibly add up to the amount of drawn water, because the water that was used to clean the mikvah, they drain it, and then they hose it down with city water. It's not natural rainwater. And therefore, they dry it purposely so that they don't have this amount that could mess them up. But in any case, he phrased it as mole hin. So Rashi, Shechayev Adam Loma V'loshen Ravo, because a person has to say things over the way his Rebbe said them. So Rashi says that the problem here was the word hin. The hin is a very odd word in Mishnah. It's a Torah word, it's not a Mishnaic word. But I heard another pshat from my Rebbe that the word mole is what's extra. Mole hin, an entire hin. Whenever you give a measure, it means the entire. You don't say an entire dollar needs to be used. What's the word entire? And the concept here is that Shemaya and Avtalion were gerim, were converts. And apparently they had trouble with the letter hey, as was common in the time. Instead of the word, the letter hey, hin, they pronounced it in. And they were afraid that the students, in a large gathering, might hear ein mayim she'uvim. Drawn water does not passel the mikvah. So in their ingenuity, when they presented, they said mole in, an entire in. And then everybody understood that the word in was not ein, not, but rather in, a measure which they were having trouble pronouncing, and they said, Mole in, an entire in. Hillel didn't have trouble pronouncing typical Hebrew words, right? The equivalent of today's CH, CH, for some people it's hard. Hillel didn't have that problem, but his Rabbeim taught it with the words, Mole in, Mole hin. So he presented it as well the way his Rebbeim taught it. Because there's an allegiance even to the style, even to the nuances of the way the Rebbe presented. In any case, that's the way it's written. And if you continue, you'll see the way we paskin is like three lines later. Shlosha lugim mayim shuvim poslemes hamikvah. The number that we work with is three lug, which I've heard is estimated at 1 liter. But again, it doesn't matter. We dry the mikveh. No one plays games regarding this. We make sure that there's no drawn water in there until the mikveh is kosher. At the end of a line, v'idach, and the third is one that you'll remember from when we were doing Nida together, the last Masechta in Shas. Shammai Yomrim Kol Anoshim Dayin Shaiton. Shammai says that when a woman experiences her period, you just go with when the period started, and from then on, whatever truma she touches would become Tameh. She has to separate from the holy foods of the Beis HaMikdash and whatever is designated for Kohanim specifically. Hillel says you have to go back until the last time she checked herself, and they had certain routine of how often they checked themselves. And the opinion of the Chachomim is, we don't go like Hillel, we don't go like Shammai, but 24-hour period would be the maximum that we go back. And likewise, whatever her last check was, would go back. So if she checked last 6 hours ago, then we're not going to passel the truma she touched earlier than the last time she checked. If she didn't check, then the latest back we go is going to be 24 hours. And they reject Hillel and Shammai's opinion, and they come up with a more lenient opinion. But again, the presentation here is that Shammai and Hillel themselves only started three specific arguments. When we talk about Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as great academies with lots of arguments, that's the academies, that's the students. The Rebbeim themselves were very limited in what they argued about. Yashar Koach, have a wonderful day.